Should the SEC get to determine the future of college football? Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. That's kind of at the crux, Pearl, of the SEC media days. We can talk about, you know, our favorite quarterbacks in the SEC and all the football stuff is super fun. But the sort of existential crisis, if you will, which is a really fun sports talk radio topic, but the crisis is whether or not the SEC deserves to have as much power as they have in determining how we're going to decide a college football champion in the future.
See, I will look at the best quarterbacks because it does connect. Mm. Because Andy Staples put out a list, our buddy, our good friend, college football writer on Three Sports, of the top, ranked the SEC quarterbacks. And you basically have, you have five top three quarterbacks in the SEC. Like, they're if you just look at quarterbacks, forget it. They're head and shoulders above everybody else. It's a crazy list. Let me just read this list. And you're like, oh, my God. They obviously, he has DJ Lagway 1, Garrett Nussmeier 2, Lenora Sellers 3, Arch Manning 4, and John Mateer 5. Like, no conference can match that. Well, that's a crazy amount of talent.
It is a lot of talent, and I think this is going to be fun even for the NFL fans because it's great when we get a good college quarterback class.
And, yeah, that's the SEC.
Okay, well, the Big 12 also has some really good quarterbacks, bro.
Show me who in the
Sam
Big 12.
Sam Levitt would be number one.
Sam Levitt, we'll see.
You love Caden Salter.
I don't even.
Avery Johnson
might not even start. Avery Johnson's huge letdown last year.
Well, he's back though.
Yeah, I mean that's not Lenora Sellers and Garrett Nussmeier.
Well,
I mean Garrett Nussmeier could go number one overall and win the Heisman for all we know. I mean it's LSU.
It's possible. There's a lot of expectations on LSU. I think most people would probably say that maybe DJ Lagway might be the most talented
I mean, he's number one on Staples' list. I'm just saying, like, that is the SEC. It is still the blue blood. Where you're trying to sell me the Big 12, no way. We know what the SEC is. You know it when you see it.
Yeah, but see, the thing about just having great quarterbacks, that's not what we've used to determine how great a conference is in the past, particularly the SEC. When Alabama was winning titles with, you know, the guy who's got the hot wife, A.J. McCarron, that could have
and Greg McElroy, who we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah, McElroy sound. But that it's the SEC wasn't even known for great quarterbacking, and that was more the Pac-12 were the guys who had the good quarterbacks, or even the Big 12.
But then Nick Saban had to pivot and build up his offense and go spread, and then he brought in Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts and Jalen Milrow and Bryce. He had the number one quarterback, Bryce Young. Like, they all switched and became the quarterback conference.
Georgia won two titles with Stetson Bennett. Whoever joked is going to be like owning a Kia dealership more than playing in the NFL.
Yeah, but also Joe Burrow and Bryce Young and, like, I mean, a lot of number one picks have come out of the SEC because they are the most talented conference.
See, I don't think that you can just automatically say that. And I don't think that just having great quarterbacks automatically, like maybe now, yeah, maybe, but that's not how we looked at the SEC historically. It
wasn't
about quarterbacks.
But everything changed when Nick Saban brought in Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian, and then it became a much more of a spread conference. Like, yeah, that's, you're talking about an old SEC.
I know, but I'm not using that as the one and only metric or even the biggest metric to determine that the SEC should determine the future of college football. Because here's the thing.
That's a good metric.
That can change, though. And this is where I'm at and why I think that the SEC needs a real check on its power. And I'm not just talking about the Big Ten being the check on the power. I'm talking about the other two Power Four. We already saw one college conference just bite the dust in the Pac-12. And I know they're trying to resurrect it, but it's not going to be what it was. So we had five power conferences. We're down to four. We see where the consolidation of power is going.
Yeah.
And I think it's to be careful what you wish for, because what a lot of people love about college football is not just watching Alabama be dominant every single year. That can be fun. It's fun to root for them. It's fun to root against them, all of that. But you want different types of schools with different types of flavors getting a shot, at least a shot. I don't know if they're going to win. I have no idea. No one knows. But at least having an opportunity. College football is better when the Boise States of the world are competing for a title and in a bracket.
What is that? Wait, that's a fantasy world. What does that ever have? I mean, you're talking about, you're saying college football was way better last year than the 100 years before it?
No, I'm saying if we're talking about the future, like this is what the SEC is trying to do. They want to determine the future of what you watch in terms of who battles for a championship.
Right. Like, they want it to be like it's always been.
No, nothing's like it's always been.
No, because
it's a 12-team to maybe 16-team playoff, and the SEC wants all the all their teams in that playoff.
Right, because everybody knows that the smaller conference teams are not going to be able to compete in a playoff in reality with the SEC and the Big Ten.
Well, then don't even mess around with the group of five. Take them out. Don't even mess around then with what? You want to eliminate the Big 12 now, too? Like, make it the SEC Invitational then, and just split away from everyone else in college football, and that might be where it's going anyway, to be honest.
Well, I mean, but you say, like, well, we all know college football is better when Boise State has a chance to compete for a title. That's never, ever, ever been the case. Like, that maybe last year it became an option with a 12-team playoff, but that's the whole new order to have this parity. I mean, and I think the SEC is kind of figured out NIL a little bit. I just think that they're going to be the best conference, like, because not just because they are the best conference. I think those schools are really focused on football more so than a lot of other schools.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. What's one of the great college football games? If we did a great debate, best college football game of all time, I bet you one of us would pick what? Boise State, Oklahoma.
Yeah, but were either
and that those? Back then, the bowl system is all we had. So, like,
right.
That's that's where you had to compete. And guys didn't do this thing where they opted out of the bowl because they were worried about the NFL. And that had not really come into our lexicon. So I'm not just saying last year. I'm saying it's better when you have teams like Boise. Give them a shot to play against bigger teams
and
see what happens. You might get the greatest college football game of all time.
But they had no chance to win the title that year.
But they won their bowl game. They won what was in front of them. Yeah, could they have won four games in a row? I have no idea, neither do you. But we got a great memory and something very unique in college football because
that was the old system.
A smaller team got to play a bigger team, air quotes.
Right, right. So there's no reason that can't happen. But that was the old system. That was during the Final Four era. You're saying, like, give all these teams a say in the playoff. What you're actually saying is they can still have memorable games even if they don't have a chance to win the whole thing.
I'm saying give them a shot. Like, again, if we want
that
to
team didn't have a shot.
But they won and they beat Oklahoma.
But they didn't have a shot at the title.
They could only play the game that was in front of them. We don't even know if they were in a bracket of 12 teams. How do you know that they couldn't have won the title?
But you're saying it was a great game even though they didn't have any chance to win the title, right?
Well, they just played in the Fiesta Bowl, right? I mean,
it was the Fiesta Bowl. Yeah, it wasn't. This was the BCS era.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right, like, right. But
they
played whatever game was
in front of them.
But they didn't need a chance to win the title to create one of the most memorable games of all time. So you can still have memorable games even if these teams don't have a chance against SEC and Big Ten.
I don't know if Boise State would have beaten Oklahoma and then moved on to play another team. I don't know if they win. If this was a bracket back then, it would have been today.
To create a great memory, they didn't need that possibility.
Okay, but you're saying that how it used to be, where you had teams that maybe no one thought had a shot to make have a memorable postseason.
No, I'm saying, like, it used to be like, yeah, obviously all these teams had no chance to win the title for many, many years. Like, most of the smaller conferences, obviously the group of five had next to none. There's no way the BCS was going to allow that, or the Final Four, right? Like, we basically had the same five teams competing for a title for a long, long time.
Of course. And when college football decided to do a money grab and the bowl system was corrupt and people didn't like the bowl system anymore, that's fine. And you want to put it to try to, you know, determine the champion, and you want to have a playoff and a postseason, which is all about money, by the way, which is fine. Sports is about making money. You have a championship, or you have a bracket, basically, to decide a champion. Why should that be just the SEC and the Big Ten?
Well, what it really should be, this is my opinion, I don't think they should have any rules. It's sort of an SEC idea. I think they should just go 16 teams and let the committee do it. I know you're going to be like, oh, what is a committee? The automatic bids cause nothing but problems. Like, why would you go 4-4-2-2-4? Like, why have rules? Like, just determine, because there are going to be years where certain conferences don't deserve that number of teams. So you're going to have some bad teams into the 16. Why don't you just say, you know what? It's just going to be an open field of 16.
Listen, I don't think it was actually a bad idea to have automatic qualifiers last year. We all acknowledge the seeding was wrong, right? Like, you can still make sure you have a group of five, make sure you have a Big 12 representative, an ACC representative, but the seeding was just off and it created some chaos. And the reason why you can't just do the rankings anymore, I think, is because you might as well not even play the games then, right? Because
last year with the rankings, all those teams making it anyway. Boise State was a top 10 team.
No, I'm saying you're going to have times when Florida State could get left out, even though that was an extreme example because there are only four teams then, but they go undefeated and they're left on the outside because of other factors that had nothing to do with football, because of injuries. When you leave it to that subjectivity, I think that you can get yourself in a lot of trouble that way also.
Right.
And in the SEC, you don't even have to win the games because you're going to be ranked so high just based off of, you know, the committee.
Yeah, but last year it wasn't that case. That's why those teams, last year it probably would have been, I think the final, 12 teams, it was pretty close to the actual rankings. So the committee probably would have put Boise State in there anyway, right? I mean, they didn't need an automatic bid,
but I think
I
the question goes beyond like a Boise State. The question is, you know, when matching the SEC against these other quote-unquote power conferences. It's, you know, all right, if we went to 16 last year, you would have had one Big 12 team. One. That's it. And no one else would have made it, and you would have had, I believe, five or six, maybe even seven SEC teams.
Wait, if you'd done what? 16?
Because we're talking about the only way this is going to happen, about these automatic qualifiers, is if there was a, or ranking them 1 through 16 is going to be if there is a 16-team playoff. That's what we're talking about expansion.
But that would have been fair last year, I think.
That would have been fair.
Like, I think, for example, like, say Colorado is second or third, like, they didn't deserve to get in over Alabama and South Carolina. There's no way. I would put South Carolina and Alabama in over them.
But they wouldn't have made it even in the way you want to do it. If it's a 12-team last year, Ole Miss wouldn't have been in. South Carolina wouldn't have been in.
No, they were
outside of the top 12.
Right. I know. But EJ was saying if you expanded to 16.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The 13 through 16 happened to be a bunch of SEC schools last year that just missed the cut. I don't think the Big 12 would deserve more than one team last year. I mean, who got screwed?
Well, Boise, BYU wouldn't have made it. Iowa State wouldn't have made it. Those are the teams on the outside.
Yeah, do you think BYU or Iowa State was better than Alabama?
Syracuse wouldn't have made it. Illinois wouldn't have made it. You would have had Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina.
Yeah, those three deserve to make it.
Well, here's the other problem with this.
They would kill those teams you just talked about.
You're welcome to call it 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476, about should the SEC be able to determine the future of college football. Well, the other wrinkle and snag into this whole thing is the conference championship game, right? Because
I know, that's ridiculous.
This is a tough one because if you have to play that extra game and you actually play for the Big 12 title or the ACC title, losing that game, I think we all agree, should not count against you. Someone who's sitting home should not all of a sudden leapfrog somebody who had to actually get up and play a big time team.
Right, and the committee always acts that way. They never count that loss against you. Remember, last year SMU didn't have any problem, and a couple years ago, what was a team that lost to Kansas State? The Big 12 team,
TCU.
TCU, right. They lost the Big 12 championship. So the committee, to their credit, doesn't care about the championship game results.
Right, but that's going to ensure that but that would mean you should get two Big 12 teams in. You should get two ACC teams in, because if you're going to keep the integrity of the conference championship game and you don't want to punish the loser of that game, then you're going to get two in from the four Power Fours.
Well, no. See, that's why we go to a 16 game where there's no rules and you can do whatever you want.
So no conference championship game at all. Get rid of the Big Ten.
No, you can have a conference. You can definitely have a conference championship game, but it's not going to be for an automatic bid.
So why don't the SEC just take the year off and just say, you know what, the top four teams we think that are great, we're just going to put you guys in and the games don't matter. That's what I think bothers these non-SEC teams is this idea that you could lose games in your conference. And it doesn't even matter if the team you lost to was good. Because, again, as long as Vanderbilt or Kentucky has SEC next to their name, we just assume that they're good for no reason. And to me, these other teams can lose to good teams in their conference. Like, BYU lost to Arizona State Hail Mary chance to win the game. Like, these were not terrible losses, but if you lose, you're done. Even though Arizona State turned out to be pretty good because they didn't play against Texas, they played them to a standstill. It just feels like it just takes away the importance of the actual results of the college football games we're actually watching during the regular season, when you say, you know what, let's just put the SEC, put the six best teams in there, because we just know that they're good and they're better than everybody else.
Right, so Alabama can lose to Vandy and can lose to Oklahoma, and it doesn't matter at all because they beat Georgia.
Right. And I mean, they say, well, those teams are definitely better than the bad teams in the ACC or the Big 12. And it's like, why? Those teams are terrible. Like, they had terrible seasons.
But do you think, like, for example, you said BYU. You think BYU could have beaten South Carolina or Alabama in the 16-team playoff? I think they'd be 10-point underdogs. They'd 14-point underdogs.
Alabama or Ole Miss? I mean, BYU could compete with Ole Miss or South Carolina. No, Alabama's good. I mean, Alabama's Alabama.
I think last year Ole Miss or South Carolina would have taken down BYU. I think they'd be double-digit
Ole Miss
favorites.
Lost to Kentucky. Like, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. It's just like, why can't BYU beat? Yeah, why can't BYU beat these teams when these other squads showed South Carolina had only good losses? So I'm not going to put them in that. But these other teams showed that they were not invincible.
I mean, I don't know. I think they'd be massive underdogs.
Even so, do you want to see it play out? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Let's go to Andreas, who's in Chicago. Andreas, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I got a simple solution fix for all of this college football playoffs. Basically, what we do is we scrap all the conferences. You go to an NFL style. Two separate conference divisions within the conference. There's a lot of teams in D1 football. Maybe you do like what they do in soccer in Europe, a lower league and an upper league.
Sure.
And you play each other all year round. You play strong opponents, weak opponents, and the records dictate themselves. You get away from the traditional bowl games, conference games, and it's a battle royale. You can have maybe a couple of automatic bids, like buys, what they do in the NFL postseason. Yeah. I think that will draw a lot more viewership outside of the normal college football fan. What's y'all's take on that?
Yeah, Andreas, I think we eventually will get to something that. But
I'm 100% with it. The lack of even scheduling is never seems fair to me. Like Indiana's schedule last year, compared to Alabama's, for example, it just didn't seem fair.
Right, but everyone has to understand, we talk about this with the NFL also. Like, we talk about the San Francisco 49ers having this super easy on paper schedule. We talk about
the
AFC South only gets one team in, and you can host a playoff game if you're 8-9, and how silly that is. So it's not going to make it perfect. Can we all just understand?
It'll make it better.
I guess
there's a randomness. There at least is a formula for the NFL schedule. Yeah, sometimes it works out great when you get to play the AFC South. But generally, though, I don't think the schedule is so uneven that it causes that kind of problem. I think it would be something to address scheduling. Chip Kelly said that yesterday, too. Like, he's like, you got to realize.
Brian Kelly,
that the LSU schedule is a lot different than what other people play. And I agree with him. Again, going on the road in the SEC is harder than going on the road in other conferences. I really believe I know EJ disagrees with me, but...
Yeah, I mean...
Vanderbilt, half the stadium was broken. I mean, they still lost.
Here's the other thing, though. I think that people like the differences between college football and the NFL. I mean,
that's true.
In college football, it's not perfect. Again, NFL's not perfect, but we kind of like that. It is so different. And I know that money and TV deals have completely upended conferences. And it's weird that Stanford is in the same conference as Miami. That makes no sense. And I get that. But I do think that people like the difference. College football fans like that it's different than the NFL.
I totally know what you mean. But I do think the scheduling is kind of weird. I mean, it's just tough. Now that we have a more expanded playoff, I think people are looking at this and say, you know, Indiana last year versus Alabama, for example.
Sure.
Like, this just something seems wrong. Like, and I'm not saying that Alabama was better. I'm just saying, like, this doesn't seem like you're comparing apples and oranges. Like, they're different. By the way, why do you keep ripping Kentucky? I'm looking at Kentucky year by year. They're doing fine over there at that football program.
They've had one double-digit win in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but you know what Kentucky football did in the 40 years before that?
They're a mediocre team.
I know. They're the bottom of the SEC, and they've been in bowls in 8 of the last 9 years.
Yeah, well, because there's a zillion bowl games. Everyone gets to a bowl as long as you have a winning record.
Is it, remember the Is Kentucky Now a Football School?
How much of a joke that conversation was. Mark Stoops will coach them up, baby. Let's go.
Rich's in California. Good morning, Rich.
No, for sure.
Morning. You'll have to excuse me, A, if I'm a little confused.
Yes.
And being a former fan of the Pac-12, which doesn't exist anymore, I thought the original complaint about college football was who was number one in the nation, was done by a committee. So we went to a playoff format, and lo and behold, we're picking the teams in there by a committee. Would you please explain to me why this is so much better than the way it was before?
Pearl, you want to take that one?
Well, it's better because there's more teams that get to the playoff.
Well, you got 16. That kind of limits what you got to pick from.
Well, wait, the way it was before, like BCS you're talking about?
I'm talking about when they used to pick it by committee. And that's the champion. And it was the big complaint that it was done by a committee.
All of a sudden, now we're doing it by a committee again.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get to see the teams compete against each other at the end.
Yeah, they just basically came up with a championship game. So that's the computer. You had other bowls, obviously. But for the title, the computer was deciding who gets to play for the championship. And then you had other teams who would say that we actually should be in the conversation. So, Rich, I think the response was, let's make this a true playoff to try to get a true champion and make it more than just one game winner take all.
Yeah, but now we're going to committees to try to figure out who gets to participate in the tournament to find out who's the best team in the nation. Please explain to me why that is so much better than what they had before.
Yeah, Rich.
It's still down to a committee.
That's college, you know, and thank you for the call. Unless you want to go to that NFL model where you do just have, I forgot what it'd be, 64 teams and, 32 in each conference or what have you. Unless you want to just do everything on the field and people are still going to have complaints about that, you are always going to be relying on some kind of ranking for college football.
Yeah, and by the way, the BCS also used polls. I mean,
yep, they did.
It's not that different than the committee. Like, what do you think the AP poll is?
But that's to Rich's point. He's like, and no one liked that. So now we're still doing it with committee.
It wasn't the BCS. I don't think it was the computer, right? The fact that you only had two teams. If
that's
you had four, you would have killed all sorts of problems. Like the year that my Penn State and Indy Lions got screwed. Like, yeah, that wouldn't happen if you had a 14 playoff.
Yeah, I think that was it. It was not enough people had a bite at the apple to try to win a title was the big issue with the BCS. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Got to take a quick break. Coming back, you can answer our question. Should the SEC have outsized influence in determining the future of college football? Also coming up, somebody's documentary is about to drop. What are we going to learn about Jarrah and his family in a new Netflix documentary? Tell you next.
Figure it out.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. You guys watch the Home Run Derby? Can I tell you what? We're back to torpedo bats. What's going on there, Maggie? Can you help me out with this?
What do you mean?
I mean, there were a lot of them last night.
Yeah, no, they're all legal. You can change. Yeah. The shape of the bat is totally changed.
It never left.
I can't remember a story that got more buzz for 8 days than disappeared as hard as that story.
Well,
we all stopped talking about it 100%.
Well, you want to know why? I think because of the amount of, we were just actually chit-chatting about this in the break, the amount of dominant pitching performances that we've seen. There were so many shutouts recently that maybe it feels like the torpedo bats are not this hack that they appeared to be, where all of a sudden 230 hitters were going to become, you know, triple crown candidates. Like, it didn't have that impact.
Oh, but we are
so wildly. But it was funny. I was just saying these guys. Yeah. Tim Kirchen said this on ESPN yesterday, that pitching today is better than it was 5 years ago. Or pitching today, like, this is the best it's ever been. And I was a little taken aback by that. Because guys are throwing harder. Because guys are, more athletic? I don't know why.
I would say more specialized, right? Like, you don't, you know, I don't think, it's not the same as the 70s and 80s where you just had to come out every 4 days and throw eight innings, right? You can specialize pitchers a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you have the three-batter minimum rule now. So, yeah, but yes, you are specializing. But that's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
5 years ago? Because, like, remember, they had to get rid of that sticky stuff, the spider tack, because guys were getting too many revolutions. They had too much spin on the ball, that so much that it was illegal. They felt it was illegal. They made it illegal. Are we really better now than we were even then?
I think so.
There are a lot of home runs this year, though, too. Is that connected because they're pitching faster? I think they're going to chase the home run record again this year.
I guess maybe I'm thinking about the elite of the elite. I'm not thinking all the way down, right? So if you're just talking about more guys are throwing over 100, like the Jake Mazurowski, who's made the All-Star game controversially because he only has 5 starts. Yeah. And he comes out and he's throwing 102. Yeah. Okay. Does that, he and Paul Skeens, like, that means pitching's better now than it was when, I mean, do you even want to just go back to Justin Verlander's prime or Max Scherzer's prime? These guys today are better than those guys?
I mean, I think in many ways, if you're talking about the best of the best in any era, that's where it gets kind of tricky. I just think there's way more depth now in terms of the talent pool overall. Like, yeah, if you're facing the Tigers randomly and you get, okay, Verlander, okay, he's amazing. But the next 4 guys, no one's going to be close to doing what Verlander's doing, where he's throwing 99 into the 7th inning, and he has that kind of spin rate and those multiple pitches.
So you're saying the 4th and 5th guy, but they're also not being asked to do the same thing. And we're just talking about 5 years ago when guys were still not going 3 times through the rotation. But, like, is the 4th and 5th starter really that much better today than it was 5 years ago? It's not that long.
I mean, Bogus is jumping too. I watch guys that I've never heard of, and they're coming in their first starts, and they're all throwing 97. And they all have secondary pitches that are wicked. And I'm like, this was not when I was watching, like, Steve Traxel just trying to get through games.
Oh, my God, it took 5 hours for him to get through a game.
Yeah,
hurry
he's
up,
just trying
Steve.
To, he's anyway. Just trying to, like, you know, smoke and mirrors his way through 6 innings. Like, it is different to me.
Yeah, but these guys also, are we sure that they're going to be around? Are they just going to burn out?
I mean, they're definitely going to burn out.
Right, so does that matter? I don't know. Maybe not. I guess the depth is better than 5 years ago is not that long ago. Like, I'm surprised, like, how could things have come so far in 5 years? That to me, like, again,
that
if you want
to... pandemic.
No, but if you want to compare to Steve Traxel, that was a long time. That was in the...
Yeah, that was like the early 2000s.
Early
2000s. Late 90s.
Of course things have changed in 25 years. But
let me ask
five
you, like,
years?
I mean, I watched the home run, but, like, guys are mashing home runs right now. There's a ton of home run hitters.
Yeah, but look at the strikeouts, though.
Yeah, so is that also a style game that you have a lot of home run hitters who are either striking out or hitting home runs?
I think they're just telling, because I think these guys are so good, I think it doesn't really make sense to say, hey, like, you know, try to spray the ball around the field, like, and get on base anyway, how, in terms of the bat. It's like, hey, take walks or just try to hit a home run.
Which is funny, because everyone made such a big deal about getting rid of the shift, right? Had to get rid of the shift because guys were only trying to hit home runs, you know, you weren't putting the ball in play nearly as much, had to make the bases bigger to try to encourage stolen bases. You needed more action on the base pass, all of that, and guys are still going home run or walk.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get at least 3 or 4 guys around 55 homers this year, maybe 2 or 3 60. Like, so I think the fast pitching helps the home runs too, right? Because all you have to do is get your bat on that thing and it's going out.
Bogus, you look like you want to say something. Yeah. Bogus joining us from the home offices today in Long Island, New York. What's up, folks?
Yeah, I still think the big issue here is the ball. We don't know how Major League Baseball makes it. I think they're free to tweak it as they so wish in the offseason. And my guess is, like, all these things are in play. But I wouldn't be surprised as well if the ball was constructed to travel a little farther than it had been in recent years. Because home runs do sell.
They're popping the ball. Yeah. Does that help them pitch faster? Like, I doubt it, right? Like,
no, but it helps the batters hit a ball 450 instead of 400, maybe. I mean, I think baseball wants home runs, and they bounce back and forth between trying to level the playing field, and I wouldn't be surprised, and I think people have whispered it, that maybe the ball's a little bit different. So when it's coming in at 101 and it hits these beautiful crafted torpedo bats, now that exit velo is 113, not 98, and that's putting extra feet on the ball.
I like what EJ said, too, that, like, there's no reason to try and manufacture runs against a guy who's throwing 101. Like, either just go
you're
for
not
the
playing
fences.
Small ball,
go
what
for
you're
the
saying?
Fences, hey, because you're going to strike out too many guys.
That's what I'm saying, man. Forget the home runs. Just let's just go back to small ball. Baseball's focusing on the home runs. Let's go back to small ball.
Manny says he does love punts. Bunts, excuse me.
Well, I love punts, too, inside the 5. You ever seen a
coffee
corner punt?
Punts and bunts for Manny, and
that's
dunks. Where we're going to leave it.
Don't forget the dunks, too.
Let's go to Bogus with the headlines. EJ, can you put up the poll? Is pitching much better than it was 5 years ago? That's just not a big enough amount of time for me. But go ahead, Bogus.
Maggie, you wouldn't call BS, but I will. We've discussed this before in the show. I've got my doubts about the accuracy of StatCast, home run distances, feel more like educated guesses than exact science. Mm-hmm. I can't accept that this system is right down to tenths of an inch, but there we were last night in the home run derby in Atlanta, and StatCast deciding that Cal Raleigh's longest homer of round one was less than an inch longer than Brent Rooker's best, breaking their tie of 17 long balls overall. Rooker might have been a little salty after being eliminated, since he thought he and Raleigh were tied on 471 feet.
Maybe if they have it to the decimal point, they should display that during the derby and not wait till everyone's done to bring out that information. That might be helpful.
It definitely was interesting.
Yeah.
All of a sudden during an at-bat, they're like, oh, new measurement in 470.6, 470.5. Sorry, Brent.
What do you think, Perloff? I know you're a big, I don't say conspiracy theorist, but you're a big eyebrow raised on the radar guns at the combine and other things. Like, what? What's more Fugazi, the radar gun at the combine that guys are suddenly running all these insane 40 times, or the stat cast on the baseball?
I'm with Bogus. It's a guess. There's just no way they have any idea. Because the wind carries the ball, too. Like, that's the other thing. Like, how do they know what the wind curves?
So how far did that O'Neill Cruz bomb go? Was it really?
It could have been 380. It could have been 650. Nobody knows.
And who are we to? It's their word against nobody, and that's what Rooker is saying last night. It's like, and he's got even no recourse.
There was when I was growing up at Veterans Stadium. They had a little mark where Willie Stargell hit the farthest home run ever, and it was. But it went through a door in like the third deck, so they actually could measure it. But they said, "Oh, it's 514." That was a pure guess. They used to just guess, like Mickey Mantle. Has like numbers that were just guesses.
They don't have StatCast then?
No, but
they didn't have computers then, Manny.
And they all, but we still quote those numbers, folks, right? Like the old home runs, like Mickey Mantle hit one 517 yards.
Yeah. I mean, there is science in StatCast. Like it's not a full guess, but I just can't accept the fact that they know it down to centimeters. That's not possible when the ball is landing in a sea of people and you lose the end of the trajectory. There's a chop house in right field last night. I mean, like there's no way that was correct that Rooker lost by 8/10 of an inch. There's no way they could have known that.
No, they wanted that big butt into the next round.
100%.
And that's what went on.
There's a simple solution to all this though. Just get a measuring tape. Get one of the longest measuring tapes that you can possibly find.
And the home run derby will last 6 days.
Okay, yeah, fine.
But the ball doesn't land,
though. They'll be still swinging today.
I mean, the ball doesn't land. Right. Would you have to see if there was no stadium there? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think they generally that's what they're doing. But I just can't accept that they can do it down to the point. Home run is probably like a 10-foot in either direction, like range of outcomes. You cannot come on and go, hey, guys, guess what? This was 470.62, and the other one was 470.53. No way.
You walk up to the person who caught the home run, and you just say, hey, can you hold this end for a second? And then you just run towards home plate.
That would take too long. All you do is you just walk toe to heel from home plate out to where they are. That's how you measure it. You just count as you go. You. 500 steps, 500 feet.
Maggie, 10 steps and she'll
be. Yeah, nobody would want me because I'd.
It that home run went 3.5 Maggies.
She just crushed a 5-year-old boy.
What else, folks?
Maggie, would your feet have fit inside those big blue gloves they were giving out to fans last night?
Actually, they're going to use that material to make my next set of shoes.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Raleigh took advantage. Tops. Of the lucky measurements to advance. He knocked off O'Neill Cruz in the semis and then Junior Caminero to win the Derby. He's the first catcher ever to do so. Our focus is now on the All-Star game. Paul Skeens has the first pitch. Shortly after 8 Eastern, the NL lineup starts with Shohei, Braves star Ronald Acuna Jr., and then Arizona second baseman Ketel Marte. It ends with Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor and one-time Mets prospect Pete Crow Armstrong, who is now the Cubs center fielder. Far from all of that, Stu Sternberg's $1.7 billion sale of the Rays to a Florida developer is now expected to close in September, and the team is expected to stay in the Tampa area. Victor Wembanyama is not Paul George. He says he is fully cleared now from the right shoulder blood clot that ended his season after 46 games. So if you need to drive to San Antonio and tell him anything like an apology, you will have plenty of options during the coming season.
Paul George could come with me. He's got time.
By the way, do we have any details on what happened to Paul George? So it was just he was working out and now he needs some really big knee surgery?
Yeah, there's one detail, 36. That's how, and it's Paul George who's had a million surgeries. Your body cannot possibly hold up.
Good thing they paid him all that money.
That is it!
I was going to say, when you mentioned him earlier in the show, I think he's got 3 years left.
Yeah, they just paid him.
Yeah. You can't bother me with that one. I could care less. There's nothing, the Sixers, you can't hurt me with this. It's so stupid that it's beyond even worrying about.
Sure. This is why we have the Summer League. The Clippers took a thriller from the Lakers last night in Vegas, 67-58.
Y'all wanted this basketball.
Yes, they played four full quarters. Bronny did score 17, 6-10 shooting. And then the WNBA last night, the Lynx got a 91-78 win in Chicago. Nafisa Collier with 29 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 steals. Back to you guys.
Bogus, thanks so much. We will get to Jerry Jones' documentary, which is on the way. Are we actually going to learn anything about the Cowboys owner, Maggie and Perloff? It's your Cowboy Quickie music. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. You're nobody in this world, Pearl, unless you have a documentary about you. It used to be books. It's not that anymore. Now you need a documentary about you. So Jerry Jones is getting a documentary. A little of what it sounds like. It's from Netflix.
Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am master of my fate, the captain of my soul.
Oh, God. Okay, put it down. That's enough.
This about the Cowboys, or is this about a different... What was that?
That was the trailer, part of the trailer, for the next Netflix documentary, air quotes, about Jerry Jones. That's your Cowboy Quickie.
That doesn't fit at all. That sounds like something about a hardcore 70s or 80s NFL team, not the Cowboys. I'm a little late to this documentary. Is this the whole Jerry reign from 1989 to now, or is this the recent Cowboys?
I don't know his name.
No, it's the whole thing. Sit down. What the trailer has is like it's Jerry, it's his family. Then you see Emmitt Smith, and you see Troy Aikman, you see Michael Irvin. They got the footage of Irvin getting arrested. I mean, it's all of that.
So it's not like the show Quarterback that just followed three quarterbacks.
This is Jerry's life story.
Oh, okay. So this is a historical documentary because Netflix has been doing a lot of more Hard Knocks style.
No, this is not like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders thing where they're just following.
Oh, where they're embedded, which I love.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay. I thought this might be an embedded. So this is a historical. Now, here's the question. Is it going to be like the horrible, horrible University of Florida documentary where they just ignored all the good stuff?
Well, I fear because Jerry, the way that he's being shown, at least in the trailer, makes it seem like he had a little bit of a hand in this.
Yeah,
one.
So
like
that's what
editorial control.
Right, like they let Urban Meyer get a hold of the edit for the Florida one, so you can't let Jerry get a hold of the Dallas Cowboy. We got to see the real stuff.
Kind of to borrow from Seinfeld, they yada yada'd over some of the best parts in the Florida one. University of Florida.
After 1996, like, does anybody care what happened? Like that's
a good
Wade
Phillips.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the best part. It's going to be the 90s. It's going to be hard to match that. There's some interesting stuff for sure, but I think the 90s stuff is going to be electric if they do it right.
If they do it right. Now, listen, Michael Irvin has been pretty open about a lot of his... I mean, that's going to be a lot of the salacious stuff, right? Is the Michael Irvin stuff.
Oh, my God. Not just him. I mean, look at all the characters on that team, all the drug problems and all the arrests and all the everything.
Right, but see, I know about that.
Yeah,
and I know Michael Irvin has struggled, and I know that he still gets into trouble these days and stuff like that. Maybe not with drugs, but you know, he's never far away from the headlines, Michael Irvin. Yeah. I'm just saying, I want the Jerry stuff. You know, if you're going to make this about Jerry the King, well, I want to know what's going on behind this. I want something I haven't seen before. I want not something I haven't seen before that makes him look like a hero. I want the real, true story, and I don't know if we're going to get that.
Well, just shut up and let me answer.
Like, for example, what happened with him and Jimmy Johnson? I mean, we know some of it. I hear what you're saying, but Jerry is not exactly a shy violet. We know a lot about it. He's probably the most televised owner in the history of pro sports.
Yeah. I mean, I want to know, one of the big things I'd love to hear from, and I don't think we're going to hear from him, is there was a longtime PR guy who worked at the Cowboys.
Rich Dalrymple. Oh, all that stuff. Okay, I hear you.
What does he know?
I've never had anything
about like the spying on the cheerleaders and stuff.
His own daughter? Not his, Jerry's daughter? I mean, there was some weird stuff in that story. I want some things that I haven't seen before, and I'm just not sure I'm going
to
get it.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like, to me, like it becomes way less interesting when they're not winning football games. Like, I mean, when they're not winning at the highest level, the scandal stuff, I guess, yeah, that's probably pretty interesting. But to me, I want to know, is Dion at the party? That's like, that's always like, who is at the Michael Irvin party? Who is in the room?
I don't know. Dion is definitely in the doc, though. Like, they show him sitting down for a testimonial.
I know Dion was at the party because it's in Silver's book, too. Yep. Boys Will Be Boys. Michael Silver are buddies. There's the one where they were, like, near homicides in the 90s, like drug-induced. And then there were all the arrests and Nate Newton. Like, there's so much going on. And what was the guy? Oh, they had a guy from Philly who played left tackle. He was so crazy.
Well, Charles Haley didn't play left tackle, but he was also
Eric Williams.
Pretty crazy.
Do you remember Eric Williams, who was really, really good? I think his name was Eric Williams. Like, they had
Eric Williams
characters all up and down that lineup. You could get some good stuff out of that, but I don't know if they were filming as much then.
I'm sure we'll be fine. I'm not worried about the footage. I just want the stories. And then we'll see also about the Jerry stuff. Like, did he ever come close to selling? You know, would he sell?
What?
Maybe any of that.
Do you think Jerry might have come close? I feel like Jerry would never sell. Can you imagine Jerry without the Cowboys wandering around? What would he do?
Drink Johnny Walker? What's he doing now?
Figure it out.
Yeah,
Now he's talking to reporters about team strategy.
Don't worry. The reporters will still have a microphone in his face, even if he doesn't own the Cowboys.
I know the bus is sold. I don't see the Joneses selling.
Yeah, after the Lakers sale, you wondered, would the Cowboys or the Yankees be next? One other thing about the Cowboys, as we're talking about the Cowboy Quickie, the documentary about Jerry, the trailer dropped, but also Dak Prescott. So this quarterback ranking, Pearl, NFL Top 100, Dak Prescott dropped 60 spots. Right, from 20
more than 60,
more than 60. It was like near 20 to near 80. Yeah. And obviously, he's coming off of an injury, but this is also supposed to be a projection for next year.
Here we go.
In some ways, and he's the highest paid per average annual value. He's getting paid more than any quarterback in the league at $60 million.
Yeah, the people who vote on it's players who vote on this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have no idea whether to go backwards or forwards with their projection. That's always been a problem. It's clearly the fact that he didn't play last year, right?
He played for some of the season.
I think he played, seven or eight games?
I'm kind of surprised that, you know, they've kind of turned, like, the players, at least, have kind of turned away from him. No?
It's funny. It didn't strike me as weird. Like, we were doing top 10 rankings of quarterbacks the other day. He wasn't on there, was he?
That was the ESPN list of scouts, coaches,
Fowler's,
and stuff like that.
He was not.
No, he was not.
Yeah, nobody was surprised about that. Everyone was shocked that Lamar Jackson was fourth.
Yeah, but this is not top 10. We're talking about top 100, and he's almost barely in the list.
But where is he in quarterbacks? 12th or 13th?
I don't know. I got to see.
Yeah, no, that's top 10 quarterbacks. That's what I'm saying. So he's probably like the 12th or 13th quarterback on there. It feels right. I actually have no problem with that. And you're saying the money. Yeah, I know the money is weird, but would you have him higher?
It's a lot of money. Would I have him higher?
Yeah.
Probably not. No.
Yeah, it feels totally right to me.
However, caveat? I would not have him higher. However, I wouldn't be surprised, and I said this before, if he had a really great year this
year. He could definitely get hot. But then again, he could definitely get injured.
I mean, that's every guy in the
NFL. No, not like Dak. There's not every guy in the NFL. Eli Manning was never going to get hurt. Dak will get hurt. That's the problem.
Here's a question for you. Is Kobe Bryant an all-time top 10 player in NBA history? Is Kobe top 10? We're going to tackle that next. It's the Maggie and Pearl Show.